American actor Michael K. Williams, known for his role on The Wire, died at 54 years old on Monday, according to the New York Police Department. An NYPD spokesperson said he was found in his Brooklyn apartment after an afternoon emergency phone call. Williams' most well-known role was Omar Little, a robber who stole from drug dealers, but he also found fame for his performance in Boardwalk Empire. Earlier this year, he received an Emmy nomination for his portrayal in HBO's Lovecraft Country. Many of his co-stars on The Wire took to Twitter after his death. Wendell Pierce said, quote, "The depth of my love for this brother can only be matched by the depth of my pain learning of his loss. An immensely talented man with the ability to give voice to the human condition, portraying the lives of those whose humanity is seldom elevated until he sings their truth."
You're listening to Conspiracy Theories and Unpopular Culture. I am your host, Isaac Weishaupt. Today we're going to discuss the death of Michael K. Williams. As you know, I've talked about many celebrity deaths in the past. Unexplainable sometimes, right? He's a relatively young man. Was he 54? Died, no, he wasn't that old, was he? Yeah, 54. But he, you know, that's pretty young, right? And officially, well, unofficially, they're saying, as of this recording, September 7th, 2021, that he died from a drug overdose. And maybe, right? People die from drug overdoses. But that's not what we're here to talk about today. I'm here to represent the voice of the truther community, the conspiracy world, because I find this to be a valuable service. And some may look at this as a disrespectful thing, and that is not my intention. There's plenty of truthers out there that are disrespectful. That is not me. I'm here to discuss the possibilities that there's some buggery afoot here, okay? Because I find that to be a service that we need to consider some other ideas and not just take the official word, because sometimes it's a manipulation. So today we're going to talk about some very sort of out there ideas that that basically this actor was in contact with some dark forces and that may have led to his death from one way or another. All right. We're going to talk about specifically, most importantly, we're going to talk about Lovecraft Country, the show he was on, because I think that is what contributed to his death. Call me crazy, but that's if you force me to provide an opinion of how the Illuminati are connected to the death of Michael K. Williams, I'd say it's through Lovecraft Country, the dark arts, and we're going to get into that. Now first, you know it's housekeeping time. Give me 2 minutes, and I'll be done with it. I recently posted on my socials that it appears I will not be able to provide my lecture at the Salt Lake City Comic-Con FanEx. It's called FanEx, not Comic-Con. They used to call it Comic-Con, but they got, I don't know, sued or something. It doesn't matter. Anyway, I wanted to, and I posted it a little vaguey. I was vague booking. My apologies. Not my intention. What I was trying to do was to give fair warning in case, because I lightly plugged this lecture. And I even said it many times. I said, look, I'm not carving this in stone yet. And originally, I didn't carve it in stone because I thought they were going to shut it down because of the virus. Okay? But that's not the case. It appears I will have to not do it, and it's out of my own safety. More specifically, the safety of my beautiful wife. Now, the specifics on it, I don't want to get too specific. But I received a death threat, and I've had those before, right? Guess what? There's crazy people all over the world, and sometimes those crazy people say crazy things. Now, do I really genuinely think my life is in danger? Not really, no. But then I received a second from a different person who didn't directly threaten lives, but ominously suggested violence towards Miss Josie Weishaupt, which is where I draw the line. And I said, you know what? I'm not doing this. Like, this isn't, I'm not doing it's not like I'm doing stand-up comedy and I've got a security guards. I mean, this is just me being vulnerable out there presenting all of this. And I was going to bring Josie with because I wanted to sign books and I need assistance doing it. And I've got this whole speech. I mean, it's a real kick in the teeth. I've got this whole thing, this whole lecture done. I was already memorizing it. I've got the slides done. And all this happened in the matter of 3 days. And I said, dude, I got to pull the plug. This is crazy. I've had a weird, ominous feeling about this anyway. And sometimes I got to go with my gut. And in fact, if you think I'm being crazy, if you think I'm being paranoid, look no further than this was years ago. Yeah, give me more than 2 minutes. Sorry. We're going to go housekeeping. Housekeeping extra. Back, man, when was it? Okay, there's a guy named Max Spires, right? If you look him up, if you Google the term Max Spires, he was a researcher. And they similarly, they say he died from a drug overdose. But there's this whole uproar, and I mean, it deserves a show on its own about how there's allegations that he was murdered, and there's allegations about how he was reading a book about satanic sacrifices, and how he was investigating in areas that he shouldn't have been with Satanists, and I mean, it goes on and on and on, right? It's this whole saga. It was covered on CNN. Well, this is where I come in, because the book he was reading was my book, Sacrifice Magic Behind the Mic, my hip-hop conspiracy book, which is not a cookbook for satanic rituals. And if the mainstream media did their job and contacted me and said, hey, what's this book about? Then you would have got a genuine story from them, but they did not. They just said, oh, it's a book and the title is Sacrifice? Yes. He's reading how to sacrifice people or whatever. But they didn't, or they got it wrong, okay? And anyway, me and Max were supposed to do a conference in Poland. In fact, he was, and I haven't really talked about this much in the past, okay? Because it's scary stuff that this is scary territory that I tread in, okay? I know people are probably like, oh, you pussy, go do it. And I'm like, I don't really need this in my life. Thank you very much. And this was maybe 6-7 years ago, whenever Max died, right? I was supposed to go out to do this conference. I don't remember. Fall of whatever year that was. Max was like, I'm going to go out there to do a conference in the spring of whatever year. I said, cool, bro. I got screenshots to prove all this. I'm not making any of this up. And he went out there, and he was going to like sort of do some recon on like where hotels we would stay at, blah, blah, blah. But he never made it home. That's when he died. Now, here's where it gets really bizarre, was prior to his death, in this small window of time between him and I talking about this whole thing and planning it and whatever. And he says, I'm going to go do this thing. I'll let you know. I'm like, cool, bro. And he was a funny guy, man. And it was funny. People say that they point to interviews that he did where he was kind of like slurring a speech and kind of doped up. But every time I talked to him on Skype, which was, I don't know, around 5 times, less than 10, he was very, I don't know, charming and normal. Like there was nothing weird about him at all. In fact, the one time I had a hard time connecting through on the video, and it was with another person that I'll, you know, some people close to this want to remain anonymous, and that's fine. This other person that was involved, they were in this, I could see the chat room, they were messaging, and he was like, oh, you're Hollywood Isaac showing up late or whatever, like, you know, ribbing me or whatever. He was a funny guy. I liked Max a lot. It really saddens me that we lost him. But he says, hey, I'm going to go to the spring. I'll let you know. I said, cool. Thanks, bro. Then I do Richard Hoagland's show, and I get kicked off a Richard Hoagland show, which I found really bizarre. And I talked to Josie that night. I said, I mean, it was like 2 a.m. or something, because it was a late night live show. And he kicked me off for reasons that didn't make sense to me. And I was like, I don't understand what happened. I just blew it. Like, I got kicked off of Hoagland's show because he didn't like what I was talking about. And that's a whole nother show in itself. Because Hoagland, whatever. I have no, there's no bad blood between me and Richard Hoagland, but at least on my side. It was a very bizarre situation. But anyway. And that was the night I talked to Josie and I felt numb. I thought, oh my gosh, here was this huge show. I just got booted. I don't know what's going on here. And she felt weird about it the whole time. And she was like, are you sure you want to go to another country and start talking about the stuff you talk about when you're getting kicked off of conspiracy shows? You're going to tell people stuff they don't want to hear. And I thought, ugh, my goddess of wisdom is right. She's always right. And that's when I contacted my person that was putting this together. I said, look, I'm not ready for this. I can't do this. And the person was like, okay, cool, sounds good, whatever. Not a big deal. And then, I don't know, a week later, something like that, a month later, Max dies. And I thought, oh my God. Like, how terrifying is that? I could have been out there and like, if there was some foul play, and I don't, again, no clue. I'm way too far removed to know what the truth is with what happened to Max Spires. All I know is that the guy seemed normal when I talked to him. He seemed like a great guy, but who knows? And the inquest or whatever, his mother asked for a second inquest. I mean, there's you can read about it. It's a long story. I'm surprised they haven't done a documentary about it yet. But anyhow, I've been close to these weird things that have happened, that sometimes when the sixth sense tingles, you just got to go with it. And I was okay. I was still okay with doing the lecture, even with the death threat, because I thought, you know, people are crazy, whatever. What am I going to do? But then when someone else brought my wife's name into it, that's when I was like, hell no. Nope. Pulling the plug. I'm losing all this money on it too, by the way. So, and you know what it is? You know who these people were? They were truthers, hardcore truthers that thought I wasn't being hardcore truther enough. So like, in some ways, we got to blame our own people that can't handle anything. This the most open-minded group that exists, and they can't handle hearing things they don't like. And I don't want to do specifics because I don't want to give it I don't want to breathe more life into it than it deserves, more than I already have. But it was basically, you know, people ribbing me because they're like, oh, you're shilling. You know, they were basically saying I'm shilling for the mainstream. And I was like, oh, brother. It's like, cool. Like, you guys stormed the Capitol. Are you going to come Michael David Chapman me here? You know what I'm saying? Mark David Chapman? Anyhow, I'm very sorry. This was not a decision made easily, lightly. Like I said, I'm losing hundreds of dollars. I put reservations down for stuff that I can't get back. I bought a ton of books. I even put another order in for more shirts, which, by the way, they'll be on Gumroad. If you want this stuff, I'm going to have it on Gumroad. So there you go. There's the whole thing. I was a little vague about it because I was still kind of like, do I want to do this? My heart told me I had to bail on it. But everything else was like, yeah, but do you want to do that? You've been planning for this. You did the whole lecture. But what I'll do is I'll present the lecture on the podcast in the future here. Once I get over the butthurt of the whole thing. Because ultimately, like, what matters to me most is my family. My wife. I will fold the whole thing up. If I feel like I need to. You know what I'm saying? And the normal rational people out there can understand that. So there you go. That's what all the vague posting on the social media is about. Yeah. So there you go. with a fun little tie-in to the subject today of Michael Williams. That was, we talk about sacrifices and people getting too close to the dark arts. And, well, could be we've got the same situation here. Now, officially, we, you know, if you don't know who I'm talking about, there's this actor, Michael K. Williams, died on September 6th, 2021 from an alleged drug overdose, which is possible, right? Like, they're putting fentanyl in everything now, this deadly drug, they're cutting into everything. But also notice that whenever there's an overdose, these are kind of the most easily dismissible claims that just shut down honest investigation and honest taking a second look at things to say, well, is that really what happened? You say that someone died from doing too many drugs, and most people say, well, don't do drugs, idiot. Moving on to the next thing. And that's why I think I'm doing a service here. And I try to do this as respectfully as possible. I mean, here's a real dude with a real family. And on top of that, I liked the guy from what little bit what he presented to the public. He seemed like a good dude. I mean, what do I know? Maybe he's a jerk. But, yeah. So, and to me, Michael was, he was chalky. Like, that's how I knew him. Because I loved Boardwalk Empire. If you haven't seen Boardwalk Empire, it was one of my favorite shows of all time. To a lot of people, he was Omar from The Wire, which, ironically, I've never seen. Even though it's, like, right up my alley. But I was too broke for HBO back when that show was popular, so I should go back and watch it. I just haven't. But yeah, I was too broke back then. Back then, they didn't want me. I could rewatch them or watch them from online. So I should. But today, we're going to take a look at some of his work to see if there's some Illuminati buggery involved. Now, first, let's talk about the background of the rational ideas behind this guy. He grew up in Brooklyn. He went to, this is what Wikipedia tells me. He went to like a Votech school, which that's some real stuff there. I did that too. I used to be an automotive mechanic back in the day till I found out that it didn't pay that well and you had to buy $1 million in tools. But he apparently he was trying to help out African Americans in many different ways, which was cool. Like, he's trying to give back to his community. I mean, shit, his dad's name was Booker T. He was working with the ACLU. And if you go to his Instagram, you'll see all these different sort of ventures he was trying to do to, you know, give back to the community. Now, what was curious was, and if you watch his Breakfast Club interview from 2016, this is how I know he's a real dude. They asked about, because on The Wire, his character was Omar, which, again, never seen the show. From what I understand, he was like this gay dude in prison, I think. And they asked if he had reservations about playing Omar, because he, you know, was doing gay stuff. And he said, no, I had reservations about not eating. Because he was kind of homeless intermittently, trying to get these roles, trying to get different jobs. But then he said stuff about how he didn't have to wear heels for that role, implying that he had to for other roles, and how he played multiple gay dudes, which, on one hand, it was very surprising, almost shocking at how frank this conversation was. This was 2016, a very different time. But when you listen to it, Charlamagne, you could almost paint out a bit of, I don't want to say disdain against a black man playing a gay character, but that's kind of the vibe I get. And I thought, we're dancing on the cancel line here, buddy. But what was curious was, if you go back to when Dave Chappelle talked about Martin Lawrence going crazy and how Hollywood makes these strong black men dress up as women and play gay characters, it made me think of all that. And I don't know enough about Michael Williams' film history. I haven't looked up every single role he played, but he implied that he had to do this multiple times. Almost like a humiliation ritual or something. On the Breakfast Club, he reveals he was molested. He didn't really get into it on the show. He talked about how he did drugs. He was doing coke. on Wikipedia, it says he worked as a temp for Pfizer, which I found ironic. But when Janet Jackson's Rhythm Nation came out, it motivated him to quit the day job, that dreaded day job. And he pursued dancing and entertainment. Again, homeless for periods of time. It says he choreographed the 100% Pure Love video, Crystal Waters, if you remember that. Then he got his real start acting from Tupac for the film called Bullet, which I've never seen. Sorry, there's a lot of instances of stuff that I've never seen to talk about on this show. But I wanted to hurry up because it's kind of a hot subject and people are interested right now. So hence the quick release on this guy. That big scar he has on his face is real. Got it in a bar fight on his 25th birthday, according to Wikipedia. He was on J.J. Abrams' show Alias, if you've ever seen that. I have not. This was a CIA propaganda show. And look, a lot of the reason I haven't seen a lot of these things is because in the 2000s, either I was too broke for cable or I was in college or both. Because college consumed my life for a good 8 years. So my apologies for not being hip to the 2000s era of show. But Alias is curious, and I only know this because I heard Freeman Fly talk about this many times, how this was a CIA propaganda show. Because it's a whole show about Jennifer Gardner playing this CIA agent. But it was used to paint the CIA in a certain light, a bit of a propaganda piece, if you will. And I can prove this to you by reading to you from The Atlantic, where it says, in March 2004, the CIA announced that Garner, reflecting the growing merger between Langley and Hollywood, meaning the CIA and Hollywood, had filmed a recruitment video for the agency. The video emphasizes the CIA's mission and its need for people with diverse backgrounds and foreign language skills, the agency's press release stated. Ms. Garner was excited to participate in the video after being asked by the Office of Public Affairs. The CIA's film industry liaison worked with the writers of Alias during the first season to educate them on fundamental tradecraft. Although the show Alias is fictional, the character Jennifer Garner plays embodies the integrity, patriotism, and intelligence the CIA looks for in its officers. So it's kind of like a big commercial to get people interested in the CIA, to get people to find sympathy or intrigue into the CIA. Because these people are killers, man. They lie, they cheat, they steal. And they have to find a way to make it palatable. Because the American public supports this through their checks, through their taxes. And it's also curious, when you dig into secret societies and the occult and these intelligence agencies, you find out very quickly that the two run in parallel. Secret societies and intelligence agencies run in parallel because it's the same idea. They come from the same place. John Dee was like the first intelligence agent. They have secret names and secret agendas and rituals and secret secrets. If you watch the Matt Damon film, Good Shepherd, they'll show you some different angles of this. And on that film, they talk about how they learn intelligence secrets from the Brits, right? That's where it comes from. And they tell you it comes from the dark arts. And it's only one line in the movie. But to me, I think they're all connected here, as do many other researchers. So anyway, he was on that show. He was in a bunch of music videos. R. Kelly's Trapped in the Closet, if you remember those. Cameron's Killer Season. But most interestingly, he was in a video by Marilyn Manson called The Mephistopheles of Los Angeles, where he talks about how he found the devil. And when he found the devil says, hey, it's not what you think. Which is much like Arthur C. Clarke's childhood end with the overlords, these aliens that are the devil. and they have to hide their appearance because they're like, look, you've been duped. You've been manipulated to think the devil's bad, but the devil's not that bad. And oh, by the way, Marilyn Manson sacrifices a woman in a bathtub, which we've talked about many times, being an occult ritual, sacrifice in the bathtub, just like Whitney and Bobby. Oh, they died from drug overdoses in the bathtub. Which, oh, by the way, it's a passage of the goddess ritual, a cleansing ritual. And I'll get that image for you. And put it on my Instagram at Isaac Weishaupt. Like and subscribe. Look in the show notes as always, and you can take a look at. I'll probably put a couple photos on there. But yeah, now we're talking about secret societies and the intelligence agencies. Well, that takes us into this talk about Lovecraft Country, which I was very excited to see. Because as you know, in the research of the occult, you can't look into this without looking into the fact that there's occultists that seek to channel entities and aliens through ritual magic. And H.P. Lovecraft, who was into the dark arts stuff, and he was kind of a racist, he's very racist. He talked about how artists could channel the aliens. Cthulhu, right? And this show was all about racism and secret societies and channeling aliens. Because it's about H.P. Lovecraft. And I was very excited to watch this show, but then I think I made it through about 4 episodes and it completely lost me. And maybe it was just a place I was at the time. I should try it again. I told you the theme of this episode is shows that I didn't watch. So I've got notes on the first few episodes. So we're going to talk about those. But this whole thing, if you want to look at the history of African Americans and secret societies, of course, you've got Freemasonry, right? But the Freemasons, who claim to be looking for equality and liberty and justice for all men, are doing it through an exclusive white male-only secret society where they won't tell anyone the secrets of what they're doing. And the dogs outside are barking. It's high amounts of drama here in suburban hell. I'm very sorry. But the Freemasons, not wanting African Americans in their group, started a separate group, who they claim is equal, separate but equal, the Prince Hall Freemasons. And then you've got this secret society of the Boule that supposedly exists. But, and in case you don't believe me, I got a quote here from Albert Pike, who said, "I am not inclined to meddle in the matter. I took my obligations to white men, not to Negroes. When I have to accept Negroes as brothers or leave Masonry, I shall leave it." That's 33rd degree Freemason Albert Pike, so take that for what it's worth. And also, it should be known that, from what I understand, every Freemason lodge is sort of independent and does their own thing. Some are part of one big network, some are kind of on their own. I don't understand the whole ins and outs of how it works, but apparently it doesn't represent all Freemason lodges. But that's the history of it, is that it was for white men only. That's why they created the Prince Hall Freemasons, which comes up in the show, kind of. Now, obviously, Michael Williams, from what I've read, wasn't in a secret society at all. And we'll cover more on that in a little bit in the conclusion. But he was in Lovecraft Country, which talks about all these different secret societies. Now, what was curious, and yeah, well, let's talk about it now, I guess. There's a video clip that I was tagged in on Twitter, at Illuminati Eyes, like and subscribe, by Alt Daz, so shout out Alt_Daz. There's a Zoom call, and I don't know the context of this call. I'm going to play the clip for you so you can listen to what I listen to. And he talks about how when he was filming Lovecraft Country, how it really messed with him. He has this real emotional breakdown.
Lovecraft Country took me on an emotional and mental roller coaster that I was not prepared for personally. And thank God I had the cast and these amazing angels around me to hold me up.
Amen. It's all right.
It's okay, Michael.
All right.
Love you, Michael.
Won't he do it?
Now you can hear how he was on this mental roller coaster that he wasn't ready for, and he talks about how angels helped hold him up. Now I think I know what this is all about, because I talk about this in multiple books. The Dark Path, I talked about it. Aliens, UFOs, and the Occult, Use Your Illusion 1, I talk about it. But it's about, and to sum it up, looking at the literature of the occult, we can say that they believe there is a creative zone that artists can tap into to get their mojo. And this is on the dark side of the Kabbalistic Tree of Life, where the fallen angels reside, the damaged gods. Kenneth Grant called it the realm of the damaged gods. And this is where the demons reside. So these artists, it's arguable that these artists who go crazy are doing some kind of ritual thing, invoking these spirits, these entities into their body maybe, to get this sort of creativity flowing. It could be that that's what happened to Michael. Did he do that? Did they persuade him to do that for the character? I argue yes, they did. And here's why I say that. I don't just say that because it fits into the narrative real nicely. I'm going to reference you to his interview on The Breakfast Club, where he talks about this dark energy. And he talks about how he has to take on these characters, this dark energy, but you need to sort of go through practices to wash it from your brain, because you channel these things into you.
Cast on this. Now, how do you get that energy out of you? And I mean this with all the roles, because I mean, you play Omar on The Wire, you play Chalky on White. Boardwalk Empire, those were gangsters. Then you play a lot of gay roles. How do you get rid of all of that energy?
Man, Charlamagne, I'm so glad you asked that, because I had to learn how to wash my psyche, man. This kid, my little brother, man, in Atlanta. This brother, like, 21 years old, we was chilling in Atlanta. I was on a set of Bessie, and the kid was like, he said, "Man, you look stressed out." I was like, "What you mean?" He says, "Man, do you meditate?" I was like, "Huh?" He said, "Man, you need to wash your brain, bro. You taking all these characters." And I was like, this kid told me this. I was like, "Yo, you gotta wash your brain, Mike." Mm. So prayer. I had to get back in the Bible, man, just to get on my knees and just like wash. I had to reconnect with my family, people mm-hmm. who matter to me. I'm gonna be 50 years old in November. So, I reconnected with my kids, my eldest son, he had some issues, some situations. I had to family came first, and that kind of balances me out with these dark characters that I play,
But he says taking on all these dark characters requires techniques like meditation and prayer. He confirms he was focused on the Bible, which tells me he was trying to counteract the dark demonic forces by focusing on the prayers, the training and the vitamins of the Bible and Jesus Christ. Which is the same argument you would see people say, Isaac, if Ozzy Osbourne worships the devil, why does he wear a cross? It's because they make contact with these dark energies. And they know there's only one thing that can combat the dark energy. Same with the alien abductions. You say the name of Christ, you profess a belief in Christ, and that's what counters all this dark energy. And that's what he was doing. Or so I argue. And should my dear listener still have doubts? Further into the interview, he goes on to talk about how when you're filming and you have to murder somebody, the reason it feels real is because he actually goes through the feelings as if it really happened. It creates energy, and that energy has to go somewhere.
That beat me up.
But let's talk about
it. Does it make you want to relapse?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, in a word. Yeah, to keep it 100.
Because you were cooking it up, you were putting it together. Yeah. I mean, the whole thing.
I don't play with that. You know, it's real. You know, those feelings when I've committed murder in a character, those emotions are real, bro. If it looks real to you, it's because it felt real to me.
Right.
You know, and you gotta, like you said, what do you do with those feelings, those emotions? Those things create energy. They have to go somewhere, and you can't keep them in you. You know, it'll cross you up.
Yeah, but you can't go around killing people.
You might
have sex with a man, you might get do some coke, but you can't just
kill people, Michael. That is not cool. You know what I'm saying?
Did it ever affect you getting to work on time and taking care of your responsibilities?
A time or two, you know, but, you know, I would like to say that I have a pretty good track record in my 20-some-odd years in this business. Mm-hmm. You know, I like to say that, you know, I'm known for being on time, doing the work, and being respectful and keeping my mess to shoe level, as we say.
And Angela Yee asks if this screwed with, oh no, it was Angie Martinez, sorry. Angie Martinez asks if this screwed with his schedule, and he said, no, it didn't. Meaning, like, he could manage all of this dark energy. But this was before he did H.P. Lovecraft Country. So he does Lovecraft Country, has the breakdown confirming that it was really messing with him, and then he dies. Do you see the connection here? Am I making it up? Maybe I'm making it up. Maybe I'm looking too deep into it. I am a paranoid guy. So let's talk a little bit more about this show. I'll walk you through the first few episodes, because that's all I could hang in there for. I thought they screwed this whole thing up, this whole show. It's such a great idea, but it was so hard to follow. I don't know, maybe I should try it again. It had everything I was interested in. I just don't know where it went wrong. But it wasn't just me, because they had a second season planned and they canceled it. Because it wasn't just me that thought they really butchered this thing. And it was Jordan Peele, which he does great usually. I don't know what happened. But episode one, they set up the show. It's a series about, I'm going to read you the thing. It's a series about a young black man who travels across the segregated 1950s United States in search of his missing father, learning of dark secrets plaguing a town on which famous horror writer H.P. Lovecraft supposedly based the location of many of his fictional tales. And I'm just going to pull out the important pieces. The main character's name is Atticus Freeman. Michael Williams is in the show, and he plays Atticus's father, Montrose Freeman. Okay? And when you watch the show, it's very reminiscent of John Carpenter's In the Mouth of Madness. If you haven't seen that movie, I did a whole film breakdown on Patreon and Rockfin and the supporter feeds, basically. And it's also in my book, Use Your Illusion 2, the film analysis book about aliens. But the show very much reminded me of In the Mouth of Madness. There's these people traveling into H.P. Lovecraft territory through a dimensional slip of sorts. They're looking for Atticus's father, played by Michael here, by Chalky. And they get lost driving through the woods. And it's almost like they say directly they're driving in circles, much like the plot of In the Mouth of Madness. And they're trying to reach Ardham. Okay, very similar to Arkham from H.P. Lovecraft. Super heavy on the racism, right? It's part of the plot. That's what it's all about. And right off the bat, you see there's this war with aliens. And this is all just like a dream, of course. But there's this war with the aliens. You even get a sexy alien who gets downloaded from a UFO. Cthulhu pops up. And Jackie Robinson kills Cthulhu. And I couldn't help at the time. I wrote notes about this when I was watching it. I'm reading from my notes. Chadwick Boseman died the same week I watched that episode. Same week it released. And Chadwick Boseman, of course, played Jackie Robinson in the movie 42. I found that very curious. Not much further I can take it besides a curiosity, right? But it started off and I thought, whoa, this is going to be intense. But somehow it just got boring. Anyway, I'll quit bitching about the show. So we see the protagonist, Atticus Freeman, reading a Princess on Mars book called Love Making on Mars. He tells a woman he's into the pulp stories and makes this nice statement about overlooking the flaws of people in entertainment. And I want to unpack all of that. First off, let's talk about how Freeman is allegedly an Illuminati bloodline. If you look at Fritz Springmeier's book, Bloodlines of the Illuminati, that's one of the 13 bloodlines, according to Fritz Springmeier. And he claims it goes back to the founder of the Priory of Sion, one Gaylord, a.k.a. Gail Freeman. Fun fact, Osama bin Laden was reading the same book, Bloodlines of the Illuminati, on the bookshelf when they killed him. Or so we're told. They say he was reading Manly P. Hall's Secret Teachings of All Ages as well. I mean, it could be more of the whole conspiracy theorist or terrorist angle, right? So anyway, the Priory of Sion, or Zion, this comes from the Holy Bloodline, Holy Grail book, as well as Dan Brown's Da Vinci Code. Da Vinci Code, of course, being fiction. Holy Blood, Holy Grail, allegedly non-fiction. And the claim is that Christ, whilst on earth here, started a bloodline, and this is the code for Holy Grail. The bloodline goes back to the Merovingians, who are seeking to dominate the globe. And the idea is that the Knights Templars and the Cathars, they were protecting this bloodline. That's why they were persecuted by the church. Because the Templars and the Cathars, they're all Gnostics. I think we're being lied to about everything. But there's elements of anti-Semitism in it, hence the name Sion or Zion. Now, another fun fact, there's a character named Gail Freeman in Hunger Games. I think it's a minor character. Same exact name. Now, another more curious idea is that Freeman is also the name of my friend Freeman Fly, but also used as a term. Free man is used by occultists many times. You'll see it in Hodorowski's Holy Mountain film. The occultist are seeking man's freedom from the Gnostic oppression of the demiurge god, the false god. So you can see how it's all tied together, right? Liberation, Lucifer the rebel angel, enlightening man, it's all kind of the same thing. Aleister Crowley wrote, in the book of the law, this is implied throughout, the true will of every free man is essentially noble. It's all about freedom. Freedom from who? From the demiurge, from the false god that the church tells you to worship. Also, I found it interesting that Atticus Freeman in the Lovecraft Country show, I don't think I can say the word, Lovecraft Country, there we go. He was reading pulp stories. He says he likes reading the pulps. And if you read Aliens, UFOs, and the Occult, Use Illusion 1, you know that that was... The pulp books were started by the founder of the Ordo Templi Orientis, Karl Kellner. The OTO, of course, being a magical order, one of these sort of secret societies, kind of, practicing magic, initiation rituals, grades of initiation, all that stuff. So anyhow, they're driving through these towns, racist cops trying to kill them, they get into the woods. Here come the Lovecraftian creatures killing everyone. They finally make it to Artem. And they show up at a mansion. And the people that answer the that live in the mansion are the white folks with the blonde hair and the blue eyes. These are the Nordics. These are the integrated ascended masters of Blavatsky's Fantasies of the Great White Brotherhood. Then in episode 2, they get inside the mansion, the Artem Lodge. A curious name, of course, the Lodge. That's what they call Freemason Lodges and OTO Lodges. And we find out there's a guy named Titus, who's the founder of this secret society that lives there called the Sons of Adam. And he's a magician. and the sons of Adam. At this point, I say, oh boy, this is a reference to Kabbalah, the teachings that go all the way back to Adam, the secret language. Titus also looks a bit like Crowley. He's got, I believe he has the devil's haircut, meaning he's bald. They show Titus doing this ritual and pulling someone's heart out. He's reading the Order of Ancient Dawn book. Talks about how Adam gives the names and the hierarchy of the animals, and this is a sort of Darwinian evolution idea. Also a play on the power of the name. That's why the magicians use secret magician names to keep their real name private, because there's power in a name. The stained glass serpent on the window of the lodge, because again, the serpent is the wisdom giver, the Gnosis, the real god, the Luciferian real god trying to save us from the oppressive demiurge god. Hell, they even talk about the son of the sun. And we talked about this many times. The sun behind the sun. You'll hear about it on my 9/11 shows. We go into it. The blazing star of Freemasonry. The star of Sirius. Lucifer is what it's all about. And you'll hear a speech on the second episode talking about how the Order of the Ancient Dawn is how they're in the Prince Hall Freemasonry. And the descendants of Titus are the sons among the sons, and that's where Atticus plays a role, because he is the last blood heir. He is the reservoir of Titus's power. And you'll find out their pursuits are, of course, immortality, as they always are. And they even do a ceremony to open up this portal to go back to Eden. And in the second episode, everything goes awry, and the mansion crumbles. And you're like, what happened? That was the coolest part of the story. So then they start episode 3. And you're like, okay, I'll hang in there. Let's see where this goes. And they move into this big house. And they find out that the previous owner's name was Hiram Epstein. Which, of course, is a play on Hiram Abiff, the mythological god of Freemasonry. And, of course, Jeffrey Epstein. I mean, maybe, right? I don't know. That's a very curious name, and I'll put the image on the Instagram as well of that. But at the end of the episode, you hear about rituals with a cipher using the language of Adam. And again, this is coded language for occult Kabbalistic ideas. The Enochian language was supposedly given to Adam, this language used to talk to the gods, to talk to the aliens. Then in episode 4, here comes Chalky, right? Chalky shows up more in episode 4. He's reading from the Ancient Dawn book, and it has this whole story about how Eve is having sex and unleashing monsters into the world. Because this is some dark stuff. And you'll hear more about the theory of the two sons. And again, you have to understand that this talk about the sun behind the sun and the two suns, it's exemplified in Arthur C. Clarke's 2010 Space Odyssey, the sequel to 2001, where they manifest a second sun and they call it Lucifer. It's brighter than the sun that we have. Of course it is. But we'll hear that there's these lost book of names and how Hiram Epstein kept it hidden in the vault, and the characters want to learn the language of Adam so they can start casting spells now. And you know, it's pretty wild. And Chalky says he can find the vault, so they head up to this museum in Baltimore. They go in after hours, and they go underground into the vault, right? They're climbing ropes like they're crossfitting down into the vault, down into the earth. And he even makes a comment. It's like the journey to the center of the earth. It's an initiation ritual when you go underground. And that's where I tapped out. And reading through my notes, I think, God, why did I tap out there? That sounds really interesting. Well, it was a very boring show. That's why. And I was probably trying to write books or something. I'll give it a second shot. I'll take another stab at it. But anyway, we're here to talk about Michael Williams. In conclusion, was he killed? Was he sacrificed by the Illuminati? I don't know. How would I know? I wasn't there. But to label it a drug overdose sure makes it convenient if that was the case. If there was more to it. We saw Michael in a video with Marilyn Manson, where Marilyn Manson sacrifices a woman in the bathtub. And Michael talks about how he faces the devil, which is Marilyn Manson, I think, in the video. He confronts the devil. And then he goes on Breakfast Club and he's talking about how it really takes a lot out of him to get in touch with these dark characters, these dark arts. And after that interview, he starts Lovecraft Country, which is entirely about dark arts and channeling alien demons for Gnostic and Kabbalistic ends. Then we have video proving that he broke down, saying that it really did mess him up doing that show. And another anomaly here that I had already posted on Instagram, he had this post talking about how his grandmother died at the age of 93, which the number 93 is the number of Thelema, Aleister Crowley's religion. Is it a connection? I don't know. I mean, it's a loose one, right? But it's sure is strange. Like, maybe this information was sort of pumped into his brain subconsciously and it was manifesting in weird ways. And finally, one thing that's very weird, just a couple days before he died, he posted a video on his Instagram of Tracy Morgan, who was on The Breakfast Club.
Okay, I had a misfortune accident. Don't cry for me. Cry for others, man. My grandmother told me, when you think you're doing bad, there's always somebody out there worse. There's people out there in the world with nobody to love, and nobody to love them. How about that? What is happiness? What is happiness? What is happiness? Whatever you think it is wrong, it's simpler than that. It's way simpler than that. You know what true happiness is? Having something to look forward to.
Now, what's interesting here is that I've been actually saying that for a while now. Because I suffer from depression and anxiety. Not debilitating. I mean, people got it way worse than me. But one strategy I use to break out of depression and anxiety is to look forward to something fun. Anything. This is a very simple trick. Simple tricks they don't want you to know. Like, for instance, I've been going through a lot of anxiety recently for reasons already discussed. See Housekeeping for 20 minutes at the beginning of the episode. And one thing that gets me through is, and this is going to sound dumb, but whatever. If it helps one person, I don't care. You can make fun of me. But like, the new Matrix movie is supposed to come out in December, and I'm really excited to see it. So there's days where I think I'm really bummed out, or I'm, you know, down on life. And I think about that and I think, oh man, that'll be fun. And just something that dumb. This is the same as dating. You know, if you're married and you got to keep dating your spouse, you plan dinner dates. It's something for your spouse to look forward to. Something simple. It can be just that easy. So anyway, in conclusion, what a bummer, right? This guy seemed pretty real. Even if he wasn't involved in some crazy ritualistic sacrifice theory, we do see a more tangible idea that he was working with dark subject matter, playing roles of characters that were involved in dark arts. And if he did in fact die from a drug overdose, then maybe that contributed to his passing, is that he had to cope with all of this dark energy, and maybe it was simply too much, which is what my argument always is for people who want to start getting into this stuff. Like, I don't have a judgment against it. Like, whatever. Like, you do you. But know that there's some dark energy attached to it. It's like ghost hunting. You don't want to bring that stuff home with you. Is it fascinating? Absolutely. But there's some dark energy attached there, and you've got to be careful. And look, how do you be careful with ghosts? You don't have that. Who do you think you are? Who do you think you are? I am. You don't have that power of discernment. But you know what? And there's, again, no judgments. Even if you do end up doing that kind of stuff, the one technique, and this isn't me Bible thumping, but one technique they claim is that the power of Jesus Christ and the belief in Jesus Christ will get you out of it. So there you go. That's the whole breakdown of Michael K. Williams and his death. It's a real tragedy. What a bummer. He seemed like a good dude. I don't know if he was doing Illuminati stuff. I don't see anything to suggest that he was dabbling into the occult arts, but I do see, obviously, plenty of evidence that he was putting he's putting energy into playing the characters that had dark energy, and it affected him. That's a fact. All right, thanks for listening. And again, my deepest apologies about canceling on the FanX in Salt Lake. Fellas got to do what a fellas got to do. And on that note, if you want to buy signed books and stuff, I got them on my Gumroad store. Gumroad.com/IsaacW. You can get signed books. I got to update the quantities. Trust me, I got a lot more quantities than what it shows on there. And I also ordered some new shirts. I don't know when I'm getting them. Should be soon. It's going to be the same conspiracy theories logo, but on the back, instead of it saying these nerds are going to kill us, it's going to say stay woke. It's the Stay Woke variant. And I should have those up mid-September. All right, everybody. Thanks for listening. Thanks for your support. And thanks for your understanding. Until next time, stay woke.